You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Tommy, it's been a busy week here at TFL HQ because, well, on this episode of TFL Talk, what are we talking about?
We are talking about Broncos. We're talking about our Bronco in specific and what the one-month ownership experience has been like. But we also came back from the Overland Expo Mountain West. We saw some really cool things, saw some not some cool things, and we talked to some neat people. And we'll talk about some of the trends we saw, both good and bad, in the off-road world.
You buried the lead. You got to drive the brand-new 2022 Toyota Tacoma.
That's true.
You took it off-road. You took it on-road.
But we have a full now video about that as well.
Oh, really? So are we not talking about the Tacoma?
Well, we can, but it's not as interesting as probably some of the other things that
I do beg to differ, Tommy. I think the people out there want to know about the Tacoma.
They painted it green. That is the end of the Tacoma discussion for 2022.
Well, it's not just green. It's a very greeny green. It's
electric lime. There you go. If you want to go deep into details, it's a bright green.
It's like that Mustang gotta have a green, or the Sublime, the Dodge does. This is that green.
Yes, but
people would say too green.
I did take it off-road for a few days, and basically the new TRD Pro has a slightly revised suspension setup, and it's bright green.
All right, well, before we get to more info on the Tacomas.
There's no other info. That is all the info.
You also had the 4Runner. We'll get to that. And the Mountain West Overland Expo. We've now owned the TFL Bronco. Thank you to Tim, and thank you to the charity that we're helping to support, which, of course, is the Ronald McDonald House. So if you guys want to support a great charity, please check out the Ronald McDonald House, a home away from home for sick families and their kids.
That is absolutely right. So we took delivery of our first edition Bronco on July 24th of 2021. So we've had it for about a month now. We have driven it quite a bit. We've taken it on and off road. We replaced the top on it. And we'll tell you about all of that right now.
And we towed with it.
Very briefly, Andre and I did. Yeah, we spent a day towing around a camping trailer.
So a lot has happened since we actually got our Bronco. And let's talk about that. First of all, Ford has stopped taking online reservations for Broncos.
Well, yeah, they just have so many, I think, and they cannot build all the trucks that they want to for all the people that are holding reservations. That's my opinion, I think, of why they discontinued the reservation system.
Well, the online one, right?
Yes. I mean, I think what they're saying is if you want to get your hands on a Bronco, go talk to your dealer for more info.
Yeah. And then they also sent out hammocks, Tommy, to every reservation holder.
Yep. For those that haven't got their Broncos, there's been a stream of patches and stickers and now hammocks that are coming your way to make up for the fact that you are not driving your new rig.
Yeah, and immediately people put those up on eBay. Like, if I can't have my Bronco, I'm going to sell this hammock to the highest bidder.
Cash out on the hammock, huh?
And, of course, Ford has also announced that they are completely replacing the top on all the hardtop Broncos. So the company that builds them, Mombasto, is, I guess, re-engineering it. They built the whole factory to build the tops, but the top that we got, as you know, sounded like a little dwarf mine going up above our heads. A little tick, 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 tick. So we immediately replaced it, put on a best top, which turned out to be great. I love our best top, soft top. It's got a built-in Bimini top, and it solved that problem. But if you are a Bronco holder or if you have your Bronco, then you are going to get a brand new top from Ford.
And a lot of the issue has been a delamination of the panels. So basically, there's this honeycombing that'll happen as the panels start to separate from each other, even after a few months of ownership. So Ford is doing the right thing, and apparently letters are going to start going out in October about when you can get your new top.
If you're watching this as a video, you'll look over Tom's shoulder, and you'll see that that's the soft top that we put on, the best top. Actually, I'm not a fan of the way the hard top looked. It kind of looked like one of those old bowler hats that guys used to wear in the 1930s, right? It was a little kind of clunky, a little stodgy. It just wasn't a great-looking top. So I hope that they, when they do redesign it, that they actually come up with something that's a little bit more streamlined, a little bit more aero, a little bit less like, you know, something that, I don't know, some like dude out of 1930 would wear.
I completely disagree. I think that the Bronco hardtop is fantastic. I really like the design. I like the modular components that it makes up.
I'm not discussing the modular. I think the modular is great.
But the design, what do you want? It's a square. Well, how do you make a square look better?
So I agree with you, Tom. You're absolutely right. The way that it functions is smart, right? So you've got the front two panels, which are like the Freedom tops on a Wrangler that come off, and then you can get sunshine into the driver and passenger, and then you've got another panel that comes off, which allows you to get sunshine or fresh air into the back seat. And then, unlike the Wrangler, you don't have this giant one-piece top that you basically need, you know, a cherry picker to take off the thing.
So where is the complaint coming from?
The look of it. The look is just, look when it's on, it
like
just
the
looks,
color?
The color is horrible because they stopped doing the body-colored ones, which we were supposed to get in the first edition because, well, production issues, and there's this kind of lip that forms at the bottom of it, which just looks really ugly.
I disagree. I think it's a beautiful top, and I think it's very well engineered. It's just not very well assembled. So hopefully they fix the assembly part of it and make it very, very good, because a lot of folks, I think the vast majority of folks, are hoping to get a hard top on their open top Broncos.
All right, so let's talk about what we've done with our Bronco in case you have been following the saga. We first took it up and over Redcone. Then you took it over to Wheeler Lake, which are both like 7 out of 10 in terms of off-road trails. Then Andre took it up and over the Ike Gauntlet. And today, actually, we're taking it to compare to the new TRD 4Runner up Imogene. So that video will be coming soon as well. And I got to say, as an off-roader, Tommy, it's pretty phenomenal.
One of the best on the market, absolutely. Tons of ground clearance. The 35-inch tall tires from the factory are an incredible thing. It's got a lot of underbody protection, decent articulation, of course, locking diffs. It is certainly as good in most situations as the top of the line Wrangler Rubicon. So yeah, they nailed the capability.
Yeah, we've got the first edition, which they threw the kitchen sink at. So we have every conceivable option on it, including, like you said, the Sasquatch package, which gives us those 35s, B-lock ready wheels, you know, that where it drags the rear wheel. What does Ford call that? Turn assist?
Yeah, trail turn assist, I think it's called. And it also has the front stay bar disconnect, which is basically a sway bar disconnect in the front for a little bit of better articulation. But off-road, it is very good. It's a little bit wide and it's a little bit heavy. Certainly that is a concern, but they really did a nice job with going full enchilada on the capability.
Yeah, under the hood, we have the 2.7 liter EcoBoost, which is out of the F-150. It produces just over 300 horsepower. We're going to do a fuel economy test. I just drove it pretty far. I just drove it to the expo and back, and then we drove it up to the mountains and back, and the truck says we're getting 20 mpg combined. We're going to actually find out if that's true when we do a typical TFL test, so stay tuned for that. That'll be part of the Imogene off-road comparison to the 4Runner. But yeah, I'm very happy with the truck. I'm actually very happy with the best top. It's a little bit louder than the hard top, but not too much louder. And like, you know, we stop, we show it to people, and everybody just seems to think that Ford, you know, really did a good job in bringing kind of the heritage of the Bronco into the modern world with this one and building a really strong Wrangler competitor. For me, a couple things that I really love about it, Tommy. First and foremost, it has lumbar support and, you know, seats that are electrically adjustable. So with the Wrangler, I always feel like I can never get, keep in mind I'm 6'2 and I've got this weird like long torso, short legs, but I can never feel like I can get far enough away from the windscreen. And by the way, just like the Wrangler windscreen, this one is really good at killing bugs.
Mm.
Really good, yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, straight up. So you're gonna be up bug murder when you get this thing. The other thing I like about it is the big screen in the center. How big is it? Do you know how many inches?
12-inch screen is the optional screen in the Bronco.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got this kind of split screen where you can do like navigation on one side and then like radio or your settings or vice versa. You can flip them around. That's really cool. I'm not as impressed by the dashboard infotainment. So on the left side, you've got a traditional speedometer, and then you've got a digital speedometer as well that then has a digital RPM meter. And the RPM meter is, like we were discussing yesterday, not really well designed because it goes up. It's like a digital, almost it looks like a
thermometer.
Or I was thinking like audio levels, right, when they go up and down.
Oh.
And the problem with that is it's just hard to tell what the RPMs are. It's just like, well, it hasn't hit the red yet, so I guess I'm not at the red line yet. I wish they had actually made the speedometer the RPM meter and then kept the digital speedometer and used some of that extra real estate for other things.
I think that is a very good observation. But other pros, it's got some of the best seats in the off-road industry, so I think they're both better than the Jeep and the Toyota seats. They've done a great job with the cargo area. So it is a large vehicle, but you have a ton of space in the back to carry things. One area that's a little bit of a shame is there is a lip, a step up between the cargo floor and the back of the rear seat. So there is a little bit of a hump. But apart from that, huge amounts of cargo capacity back there and pretty decent rear seat legroom, pretty much on par with, I think, both the Jeep and the Toyota.
Yeah, I agree. It's just my impressions of it are it's a very wide vehicle. I'm not sure it's – I want to say – did you know that I think I was looking at the numbers. I want to say the 4Runner is actually the longest of the three. So it goes, I think, 4Runner, then in terms of length, I want to say it's like 170 inches maybe. I'm picking this out of my memory, so I could be wrong. But I remember the 4Runner is the longest, then the Bronco, and then the Jeep. You'd think the 4Runner is actually smaller, but in terms of length, it's actually longer. But size-wise, I have no complaints. We have that kind of Bimini with a bikini top, and my head doesn't hit that, even though it's built into the vehicle, which is great. I also like the fact that it has a volume control, oh my God, and a tuning knob. Both, they're disappearing from all vehicles, which is really cool. From a build and construction point of view, I think it's okay. It's typical Ford. It doesn't feel like rock solid like a Mercedes maybe, but at the same time, it doesn't quite feel as, well, thrown together as a Tesla might, where every time you close the door, you feel like something's going to fall off of it. I also like the kind of the seating position. I think, you're sitting up very high in this vehicle, so you're almost at the level of like a Ford Raptor, which is pretty crazy when you think about it.
So some other things I'm not a big fan of. I don't like the audio system. It still isn't very good.
We've got the upgraded one. Ours was, by the way, in case you're wondering, $63,000 as configured.
And I really don't like the hoop on the front end of the vehicle. I don't understand its purpose. Basically, there's kind of like, is it a push bar? Is it supposed to be a stinger? But it's this hoop that connects from one end of the bumper to the other and then extends all the way up almost to the top of the grill and back down. And I just don't see the purpose of the hoop. It doesn't feel like a structural member. It doesn't have any mounting locations on it for lights, at least not that I have seen with little tabs. So I'm not really sure what the purpose of that hoop is. So maybe get it without the hoop.
Yeah, and then I do like the fact that I think we have 6 auxiliary switches, so I think at some point we're going to start adding auxiliary things like lights. But the lights are way cool, the way that turn signal integrates into the headlights, where it's a horizontal line that goes into the round signature LED circle around the headlights is really cool. So some of my misses... That I kind of don't like. The interior is not $63,000, Tommy. You got to admit that, right? That is a $30,000 interior in a $60,000 vehicle.
Yeah, but the commenters are going to say it doesn't matter. It's an off-roader.
Yes, but like some of the stuff is pretty goofy. So I'm kind of anal about dust and such, and there's this kind of like sticky, rubberized material that's on top of the dashboard. And yesterday I decided that it was too dusty, so I went and got one of those wipe cloths, that already come pre...
I think the word you're looking for is wet wipe.
Yeah, it was a wet wipe meant to, and I did a really good job on top of that to clean it off. And then I'm driving home and I'm like, good God, it looks like a baby puked up on it. It just doesn't wipe off.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
It's true, right? It doesn't the material is like it like seems to hold on to dust. It's like, and then just you swish it around. You don't pick it up.
It's like a textured plastic on the top of the dashboard.
And the one that really bugs me is in the armrest, you open it up and there's a little tiny like tray that looks like it would be something that was in a box that you'd throw away after you got whatever was in that tray. It's that cheap.
Yeah, there's certainly some cost-cutting going on the interior, I agree. And I think that there's like a misconception that because it's an off-roader, it has to be, you know, kind of poorly constructed. And then if it's a luxury vehicle, it has to have quality. But I don't think that's mutually exclusive things. I think you can have a beautifully constructed interior in an off-roader. But I'm not sure that the Ford is an example of that. However, the touch points generally are very nice. The steering wheel feels good. The seat material itself, we've got the leather seats, are quite nice, although I think the dark blue is a weird choice.
Go with the orange.
Yeah, that's kind of an odd choice, but
Bronco colors.
Navy Pier is the color of the interior, which I think is a first edition thing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like, unless you're a huge Broncos fan, the purple-ish and orange color, which is actually yellow. The orange isn't really orange, is it? Is it yellow?
It's called Cyber Orange.
But it's really yellow. Everybody calls it yellow.
You're going to make some Bronco owners mad there.
I'm just telling you.
Big contentious point on the forums.
I'm just telling you. We stop, people look, and they go, oh, I love the yellow Bronco. And I'm like, it's orange. And they're like, look at me like I'm crazy. So
It does contrast nicely with the black grille and the black mirror. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing I'm a little disappointed about, and it does tow well. So the part I'm disappointed about is that the first edition was supposed to come with the tow stuff, and then they stripped it out of it, probably because of payload, because it had so much already luxury and features in it. So we had to go put the tow hitch back on it, which wasn't cheap. So we got the Ford one. We had to get the wiring. It was like an $850 job, which I think apparently now is normal because we're going to be paying $750 to do the Subaru. So I guess this is the brave new world that we're living in. But it only tows 3,500 pounds, which seems, you know, competitive with the Wrangler, but for an engine that's out of the F-150, that 2.7 liter, which will tow, I think, at least 9,000 or 10,000, it seems really down on towing capability for such a big and wide and heavy truck. Usually it has to do with cooling.
Yeah, I should have asked the engineer. Maybe I'll make a note of that. But that would be an interesting conversation to figure out why it isn't higher, because the 4Runner is 5,000. And then the Ranger, which has a smaller engine than ours and is loosely related to the Bronco, is up to 7,500 pounds, which is a much, much higher tow rating than what the Ford can do. And it's not like if you get the smaller tires on the Bronco, you can do more than 3,500. 3,500 is the max in the best configuration.
Yeah, and we did, like I said, a tow test. You can watch that. It's over up at TFL Car, and it did tow really well. I mean, I want to say it got like the usual amount of brake applications, and it certainly didn't struggle with the 2,500-pound trailer. It was an off-road trailer we were towing. So thanks to our friends at Boreas, they lent us that trailer.
I think that video is actually on TFL Truck.
Is it on TFL Truck? Okay, so it's on Truck. Anyway, if you want to see how it tows, it did really well. So I'm just a little disappointed that it doesn't have, you know, at least a $5,000 tow rating. I'm impressed by the shocks, Tommy, and the tires. I think that those tires are really good. Goodyear, what are they called?
Goodyear Territory. I think they're MTs.
Yeah, the tread, you know, we've only put on, I want to say, 1,600 miles so far. We've had about a month. But so far, they're holding up really well for 35s. The Bilstein reservoir shocks seem to do a really good job in controlling it both on and off-road. I like the fact that they're yellow and they match the orange color of the Bronco, but it's cool seeing them underneath there. The skid plates have gotten a workout. The only part that is kind of weird is that where it hangs, the little hanger for the rear suspension, we've hit that a few times, right? And it's already starting to rust a little bit.
So that is the mount for the rear trailing arms,
yeah.
Where it mounts to the frame. But that isn't uncommon. That is a low-hanging part of the vehicle. The other part of the vehicle, which does hang a little low, are the front shock mounts. As they connect to the lower control arms is a concern, but it actually turns out, even in the off-roading we've done, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Now, the other cool thing about the first edition, so the first edition, I think, was limited to somewhere around 7,000. It was like 3,500
yes,
initially.
Exactly right.
And then it doubled it to 7,000. You do get some cool stickers, and I didn't think I'd like the stickers, but you get the cool side graphics on the door, a very cool hood graphic. And then the weird blue interior. But the graphics do look very nice on both the doors and the hood.
And I do like looking over the hood. It's so wide and flat. And then I know it's got these like little eyelets on the leading fender. On the wings, as you British would say. And those are meant to be like used to hook cables that go to the roof. So if you're in Borneo, you don't have branches that break your windshield.
The limb risers?
But yeah. But I call them gun sights. And it's pretty cool. You can kind of line up the gun sight with other cars and or line it up with the lane lines. It's a really cool feature. It's just a fun way to look over the hood. And I think people are going to really enjoy those. I'm glad they did those because you spend a lot of time looking at it when you're driving it.
So the 2.7 certainly is not a very good sounding engine on the outside.
No.
But I think there is some augmentation going on because when you drive it, it sounds pretty cool on the inside. So that is a pretty cool and kind of crummy thing. But we'll have to wait and see how the longer term reliability is with the 2.7. It's been around, as you mentioned, in the F-150 for a number of years now. And I think it's got a pretty good track record. But I will say, if you're going to go Sasquatch with the 35s on the Bronco and you live at elevation like we do here in Denver at 5,000 feet, the bigger engine is probably a must because I think that the smaller 2.3 would have a harder time lugging around those big tires.
Yeah, we were having this conversation. You know, there's now, of course, an Escape, and then they based the Bronco Sport on the Escape, and now there's the full-on Bronco. Every time I see a Bronco Sport, which is, of course, the Escape version, I kind of feel like I feel bad because I kind of feel like the people in there are looking at the full-size Bronco like, you know, why didn't we get this? So do you think that the Bronco will hurt Bronco Sport sales, or do you think it'll hurt Escape sales? Or both or none?
Well, I think a lot of people driving Bronco Sports don't know that they don't have the big-size Bronco.
That's what I'm saying. When I pull up next to one and I look down on them and they look up at me, the look on their face is like rather dejected. I feel bad.
No, I think honestly that a lot of people buying Bronco Sports were in the market for a
small crossover.
That they yeah, like a RAV4 yeah. or an Escape. I mean, I think the Bronco Sport has pretty much single-handedly killed the Escape for a lot of folks. I don't really know why you would buy an Escape nowadays over a Bronco Sport.
And let's face it, the Bronco Sport is probably one of the best. We've tested it off-road in that segment.
Very good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's got the GOAT mode that we have as well. And it does everything you'd want a small crossover to do. But when you pull up with a full-size Bronco with 35, I mean, look, the tires are almost as big as the darn car's hood, right? I mean, that's how much bigger the Bronco is.
But keep in mind, too, we're talking about a very different price segment and a very different buying rationale. So a Bronco Sport is going to be much smaller, much more maneuverable, much more affordable, cheaper to run in terms of fuel economy as well. I wish they had the hybrid system out of the Escape in the Bronco Sport, and if they did that, I think there'd be no reason for the Escape to exist. But that's just my personal opinion, because the Escape in the previous generation was a little bit more squared off, and then before that was a little bit more squared off, and like the very first Escape was basically a Bronco Sport. The very early ones from like the 1990s. And I think that Ford basically just reinvented that first generation Escape as a Bronco Sport as the Escape has gotten more round and soft over the years.
Now, for all of you guys and gals out there who have Wranglers, you may be wondering, well, how does it stack up to a Wrangler? I would say that on road, there is no doubt that the Bronco is better. On center feel with that independent front suspension is better, Tommy. It just doesn't wander down the road as much as a Wrangler
it's
would.
It's a little better. So I drove with Andre.
Well, you got a Wrangler.
I drove the Bronco on the 33s in Texas, and that one was way better than a Wrangler, no doubt. But when you put 35s on it, a lot of the benefit of the Bronco over the Wrangler disappears. I mean, you put 35s on everything, on anything, and you're going to numb out the steering, and it's going to become
like
a little bit more willowy
like
wallowy.
Bones. You got like kind of whooshy, squishy. You know, it's the exact opposite of like your mini GP, which is precise and tactile. Now it becomes kind of like balloony.
Yes. So you put those balloons on any vehicle, even a Miata, and it's not going to drive as well. So I agree with you that the Bronco is better. Our Bronco is probably a little better than my Wrangler on road, but not hugely so. The steering is better. The composure over expansion joints at speed, however, is marginally better.
I'm not sure. I think they're both pretty bad, actually.
You should try that 4Runner, though. Yeah. That 4Runner, I think, is better than both of them.
Yeah.
By far. I mean,
as an on-road vehicle.
As an on-road vehicle, the TRD Pro is, I still think, the best in the off-road segment from an on-road standpoint.
I completely agree, Tommy. And then off-road, I'm going to give the advantage to the Wrangler. I think the Wrangler is still better off-road. I think the biggest issue is the Bronco, whether it is much wider or whether it feels much wider, it just is much wider in my head. And so I kind of like the more, I'm going to say, agricultural nature, tool-like nature of the Wrangler. I feel like the Wrangler.
Cultural.
I feel like, yeah, like
that's harsh.
No, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I think like you know, like tractors, and once again, this is going to come off the wrong way, but tractors are designed to be really good at doing things that tractors do. And so if you want to use something that is not a tractor to do tractor stuff, you're better off with a tractor. And that's what I mean. The Wrangler is just so good off-road. It is so capable and even out of the box, so immediately like easy to use and almost fearless in its approach to off-roading. The Bronco doesn't quite have that same kind of natural athletic ability off-road. It'll do it. But I just think that the Wrangler is just like, you know, for my generation, the Michael Jordan of basketball. It just does everything so well off-road.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because it depends. Off-road is such a wide spectrum.
That's true.
I mean, the kind of off-roading we do in Colorado is
rock climbing and trail running.
Yeah, a lot of slow speed over big rocks and through holes.
But you have to admit the Wrangler excels at that.
I'm no doubt, but I have also little doubt that the Bronco is nearly, if not as good as a Rubicon. It really is an amazing machine. Look, once again, you put 35s on everything, on anything, and it's going to be pretty amazing off-road. And I think that Ford has done an excellent job. Like the locker engagement on the Bronco, way better than the Wrangler. The sway bar disconnect operation on the Ford, way better than the Wrangler. I think the Wrangler articulates better, for sure, especially Rubicon with the sway bar disconnected. I think it articulates better. And no doubt the size is a massive advantage where we live. But if you live in Arizona and you have much wider, more open trails with higher speeds, the Ford's going to do better than the Jeep.
Yeah, so one of the things we want to do is, you know, the Bronco has GOAT mode, right, which is goes over any terrain, not greatest of all time. And, like, it's got, like, rock and sand, snow and mud, rock crawling. And so we want to do a test of all those. So we want to go into the sand with it. We want to go into the rocks with it. We want to go into the snow with it and do it in one video. So we're hoping to get that done. But it's going to take a little bit of time to produce that video to have, you know, all those different GOAT modes. And we're going to give it a little bit of a spin and make it fun. But, yeah, I just feel like, at least for the kind of off-roading we do, the Wrangler is still the king. And the other way that the Wrangler is the king is in terms of engine choices. Right now in the Wrangler, do you have five?
Yep, you've got a lot of them. Yeah,
you've got the 3.6.
Sure.
You've got the diesel.
I got them. Right. I think I can do them faster.
392.
Okay, ready? 3.6, 2.0, 3-liter diesel, 392, 4xe. And then there's also an e-torque version of the 3.6. So really you have five or six different versions. So yes, a lot more in terms of choice. But I think that Ford has offered two very potent engine choices. You can get it with the 10-speed auto, or you can get it with the 7-speed manual, both of which are more gears than you can get in the Jeep, it's worth noting as well. From a value standpoint, you get a lot more standard features in the Ford. So standard air conditioning, standard power windows, standard power mirrors, which are still an option in the Jeep, which I like because I'm a time traveler from the 1880s. But for most people, I think power windows are probably a good thing in 2021. I will say this, too. I just spent last week off-roading in the Tacoma and the 4Runner, and I forget what a machine the 4Runner is.
Yeah, great transition, Tommy. I was feeling sad for our Toyota fans out there. Let's go and talk about obviously, they're still driving impression on the new Tacoma, right? You can't talk about how it drives, can you?
No, there's still an embargo on the new Tacoma. But I will say there's not a lot of changes to the Tacoma. It's still a third-gen Tacoma, but I can talk all I want about the 4Runner.
All right, so when is the driving impressions embargo on the Tacoma?
You'll see the video up on TFL Off-Road later this week, so at the more probably at the end of this week maybe.
But if you're expecting major changes, I'm not going to say anything, but you can tell what they did, right? They gave it a little bit more lift, right? 2 more inches of
like
lift?
Like an inch and a half.
Of lift. They stamped Tacoma on the back of the tailgate.
And they painted it green.
So you can kind of surmise what that means for driving impressions.
But I can talk about the 4Runner, the 21 4Runner, and I drove the beans off of that model.
You know what the 4Runner is, Tommy?
What?
The 4Runner is like an old shoe.
Once again, you're really going, you're trying to say nice things about these vehicles, but they're coming off as very negative.
It's like an old shoe. It's comfortable. It's very comfortable. It's not the most stylish thing out there because, let's face it, it's been around forever. I mean, this time I'm not trying to say really nice things. I'm just trying to be honest about it. What other vehicle you know that still has a 5-speed? Is there any? Are there any? How many vehicles now actually have 5-speed automatic? I can only think of maybe two others.
What are the two others?
I can't think of them now.
Exactly.
I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, but it's...
That 4-liter I love, but it's ancient.
The old shoe.
Yes.
Next, you're going to be
very
like...
Very comfortable.
You're going to be like, yes, the Toyota Tacoma. It's nostalgic, like tuberculosis. That's going to be the next thing you're going to say.
By the way, what job did you have in your 1880s life there? What were you?
I was in charge of putting buckles on shoes and hats. I was the buckle smith.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but I do...
You weren't cheap shearing or something like that.
No, not cheap shearing.
No.
I do appreciate the old shoe analogy, and I think there is something there. Maybe not an old shoe. Maybe like a Converse. It's like, you know, a Chuck Taylor. It's a classic design.
All right,
it doesn't need to be updated. And genuinely, I still think that the Tacoma TRD Pro, sorry, I genuinely think that the 4Runner TRD Pro is one of the best looking SUVs on the market. It looks phenomenal.
So first of all, if you live in Colorado and you come here and you move here, one of the things that the state makes you do before they issue a driver's license is you have to attest that you've owned a 4Runner in your life.
Yeah.
If you haven't owned one, you can't live here.
Or a green Subaru. And if you're trying to move to Boulder, they make sure you have owned some of those. What are those sandals called?
Birkenstocks. Yeah.
That's the one.
Well, we've actually owned a 4Runner, as every Colorado resident has had.
Yep, when I was a little baby.
Yeah.
But... So
they're part of kind of the DNA of Colorado.
Yeah, and you do see them everywhere, but you see them everywhere for a reason. So the fifth gen has been around for 8-9 years, something like that. They have facelifted it, but it still has the amazing 4-liter V6, which Toyota just will not kill, and I'm glad
thank
for
God,
it.
Actually. I love that better than the 3.5 in the Tacoma.
Brilliant little engine, naturally aspirated, just about unkillable. That 5-speed automatic, just about unkillable. The whole drivetrain is super, super sorted.
And it's all packaged in a very family/dog/cat/hamster package, right? I mean, it's the perfect... If you're a lifestyle-seeking, adventurous individual or family, this is the perfect vehicle. It will fit your lifestyle like a glove.
But if you are into the off-road world, I was amazed by how capable it still is. So... locking rear diff, it's got goat mode essentially. Toyota calls it multi-terrain select, and it's got crawl control. But the locking rear diff, the off-road suspension, the small wheels, I want to say they're like 16s,
yes.
With big old tires means that...
Which is perfect, actually.
Yeah, you've got a monster amount of sidewall, great grip on the trails, good underbody protection. Like, they just go everywhere.
And unlike the Bronco, which doesn't have this yet, there's a huge aftermarket world. Not as quite as big as the Wrangler, but nevertheless, if you have either a Tacoma or a 4Runner, you will have a plethora of choices for either lifting it or customizing it or, you know, rackizing it or winchizing it or bumperizing it, whatever you want, that world is just huge.
Plus, I do have to say, both the Wrangler and the Bronco have side-mounted swing gates that open to the passenger side.
Yep.
The 4Runner has a traditional lift-up trunk, and I still think that is way more convenient. It's easier in tighter spots. And the benefit is, if it's raining, the trunk will offer some protection from the elements when you're trying to get stuff out of the storage area.
Yeah, and I'm talking out of my own experience here, but the 4Runner will outlast both of those combined.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And you can roll the rear window down.
You can't roll the rear window down, yeah.
I did that on the trip, and half the journalists were like, oh my God, I totally forgot about that. But that's the first thing you have to do in a 4Runner, is roll the rear window down.
And have your dog stick his head out.
Great vehicle.
And you're ready for Colorado.
I love the 4Runner.
Get the green and white plates.
Now, the tech is looking a little dated, although, something worth noting, standard adaptive cruise control, standard lane keep assist, and all the Toyota safety sense.
Toyota's putting all the safety stuff, which is great. This is something, Wrangler, you should be doing. There's no reason not to have safety equipment.
Ford is not doing it either. I think it's an option on the base Fords, too.
I know. It's great that the Japanese are putting in all this. You know, you put the most precious thing in your life into the vehicles that you own, including yourself. I'm, of course, speaking of your family and your friends, but it should be as safe as possible. Things like autonomous braking, just a no-brainer. You know what I mean?
Yep. And it also is worth noting that the 4Runner is the only one of the trio we're talking about today that you can buy in two-wheel drive.
I misspoke. Autonomous emergency braking. Sorry.
Autonomous braking, I think.
I didn't want people
statement.
Thinking it just brakes when
did
it
you know
to.
You can get a rear-wheel drive 4Runner?
I did not know. Is there still that available?
Oh, yes.
So if you live in Florida or, let's say, SoCal, and you're never going to see snow, it doesn't matter?
It does start more expensive in four-wheel drive than the Ford or the Jeep. I think it's like mid-30s starting for a 4Runner. But it's a very, very good vehicle. And that transitions us to the last topic of the day, which I want to talk about, because we...
The fact that you can't get any of these right now?
So you could probably get a 4Runner.
You can't get a Bronco.
Well, Bronco's the debacle.
You certainly... We just drove by the Jeep dealership. All they have are the brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee L. I think they put all the chips that they had in the in their storage into the new Grand Cherokee, so no Wranglers. Gladiators are also off the menu now. And so, I don't know, Toyota just announced, of course, that they're cutting production by 40%.
Oh, geez. Now you can't even get 4Runners.
So I don't know if you can even get a 4Runner at this point. So, yeah, I mean, right now we're kind of just talking about vehicles that are unobtainium.
So we drove these Tacomas and these 4Runners to the Overland Expo Mountain West, and the Overland Expo is basically a gathering of people in Birkenstocks who have tents on the top of their vehicles. But in all seriousness, it is a very... kind of large gathering of companies and enthusiasts that want to go out and showcase the latest and greatest in the off-road. And
there's now three of them. It started in Santa Fe, you know that.
Camping
now,
World.
Now there's one here.
Santa Fe. I didn't know that.
Yeah, in New Mexico. Oh, no, not Santa Fe.
Flagstaff.
Sorry, Flagstaff. Yeah, started in Flagstaff. We've been to that one like three times, right?
Yep, so there's Overland West, which is in Flagstaff. Overland East, which is, I don't know where it is.
This is Mountain West.
Yeah, where is the East one? You know.
It's somewhere on the East Coast.
Yes. And then Mountain West is the brand new one.
I think it's in one of the Virginias.
Okay. Mountain West is a brand new one, which is in Loveland, Colorado.
Which is the one we went to.
Right. So the theme of this year was
double, no, make a quadruple XL trucks.
Yes. Like Kenworths and Peterbilts and Unimogs and F750s.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say that. That's where it's going. So there were a boatload of Sprinters, 4x4 Mercedes vans, right? That was by far the most popular. Except for, of course, the Tacoma. There's no doubt that the Tacoma is still the overlanding off-roaders' go-to vehicle, whether it's lifted, whether it's got a tent on top of it, whether it's, you know, just stock, just everywhere were Toyotas. Then, of course, the van is next, the Mercedes Sprinter 4x4, right? Done up by Storyteller or one of the other dozen companies that basically lifts them and puts on bigger wheels and tires and winches and... fenders and bumpers and racks and solar panels, and then of course converts the inside to things like showers and beds and air conditioners. You know, it's all there. It's all very expensive too.
I feel like I didn't see that many Tacomas at the show.
Oh, I did this walk around. If you want to see a walk around, go to TFL Off-Road and just count the number of Tacomas as I walk the expo.
But I feel like I saw more 4Runners, and God, did I see a lot of Land Cruisers. There's a lot of Land Cruisers.
Yes.
And the new kid on the block, which I'm also seeing a ton of, are the Lexus GX. So Tacomas are a little tricky because you have to outfit the bed with some kind of rack system to make it usable. Whereas a 4Runner or a Land Cruiser, you just start piling things on the roof and on the into the trunk.
So let's talk about trends and let's talk about kind of the hits and misses, the favorites and the least favorite that I saw there. So I think the trend definitely that has now gone full on mainstream is a rooftop tent.
Yes, it's been around for a while, but now it's everywhere, and they are getting ridiculously expensive. So I took a look at one last week, a roof nest that was $4,000, which I thought was crazy. But then you saw an Expedition with a $19,000 rooftop tent, is that right?
Yeah, apparently it's a Longmont company, the local. The guy used to work at Earth Roamer, and now he's doing his own thing, and they're building these very expensive, I'm going to call them condominiums. He called them campers, rooftop campers. I think in 19K it's a rooftop condo.
But it looked like a normal rooftop tent. That's why I didn't believe you when you said it. And then people in the comments.
Yeah.
No, I know. But basically what it was a new Ford Expedition that was lifted and kitted out. And then apparently it had $19,000 worth of rooftop tent on this thing.
I expect like a composting toilet in there. I do not. if I'm spending $19,000 on a tent, I will not crawl down a ladder
but it didn't
to use
look,
the bathroom.
It didn't look enormous. It just pivoted up at the back like every other rooftop tent.
We're going to call them and we're going to find out what the scoop is on them.
Why it's a $19,000 rooftop tent?
We are.
Okay.
We are.
I think that'll be a good investigation.
We're going to do a video. I want to know. Inquiring mind. I want to know, dude. So those are everywhere. Those are ubiquitous. Whether they're, you know, our friends at Roofnest or some other company, It's the go-to like thing right now. Then the next huge trend, I have to say, are, like I said, those sprinter vans, whether they're built out by, you know, specific overlanding companies or whether they're just stock, they're just everywhere.
I also will say, this was kind of funny, there was a dealer that showed up, a Mercedes dealer.
Mercedes of Loveland.
Was it Mercedes of Loveland?
Yes. They had like 20 vans.
This was a bold move. So they show up to, which is kind of cool. Like, let's showcase a Mercedes dealer and, you know, show your mom new. But then the vehicles they showed up with had prices on them, including market adjustments of like 10K. They were marking them up like 10 grand for a Sprinter van with four wheel drive.
They used to import and reassemble them here in Charlotte, and now they actually build them at the factory. And I think they can't pump them out fast enough.
But like any respect I had for this dealer for showing up to an enthusiast setup was kind of lost by the fact that they were marking the hell out of these vans.
Hey, if you're a dealer and you're doing market adjustments, I'm just telling you, you might be making money in the short term, but you're burning your customer base in the long term. I know a lot of people who come to us and they say they will refuse to buy a vehicle. They would rather go out of state, or they will rather buy a used vehicle than pay market adjustment. I'm just saying, if you think that is your long term business strategy, you're probably not doing your business much good in the long term. Because look, Tommy, what comes up is going to go down. We're sitting here right now, and of course, we're seeing a lot of dealer shenanigans because vehicles are
unattainium.
But I promise you, give it a few months, maybe a couple of years, and it's going to be the exact opposite. That'll be Bronco stacked up like cordwood. And the dealers that are treating their customers right, treating them not like shills, which is that's how I feel. I'm sorry. If I go to a dealer and you've got a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 markup, I'm just at that point, I'm just a shill. Hmm. I'm not a customer anymore. I'm just some mark that you're going to try to squeeze for the most amount of money possible. And you know, if you want to make me feel like, you know, like I'm some mark in some bad poker game, I promise you I will never visit that dealership again. And I've heard that from a lot of people. So yeah, going to an expo and marking up your vehicle's market adjustment, I think is very self-destructive in the long term.
Although you got to keep in mind too, dealers don't have inventory and they got to feed their families too. You know,
making more money now than ever because what they're selling are the vehicles that have the highest possible markups, and they're selling them at full MSRP or over. So you know, until recently, there has not been exactly a lot of tears shed for dealerships or car companies because what they've done is, because there's much less competition, the consumers end up paying more for the vehicles that they're buying.
So moving on, we also saw a lot of solar panels. I noticed a lot of push toward onboard electricity and storage of batteries and ways to power the batteries, which are typically going to be solar panels. That was a big deal. A lot of flatbeds too, so this is becoming a trend too. Pickup campers, like sliding campers into a pickup truck, but rather than just simply taking a big unit and sliding it into the bed of a truck, you remove the bed of the truck, you replace it with something like an aluminum flatbed.
Like an Australian kind of overlanding.
And then you build out basically a box on the back of your pickup as a camping place.
Now, we got to wrap this up, Tommy, because we're running out of time, but let's talk about the hits and misses. So I'll talk about the biggest hit I saw. GMC rolled out their kind of overlandy GMC pickup truck, right? And I think they did a hell of a good job with it. I just loved everything about that truck. And once again, there's a video. I don't want to go through what they did to it, but basically lifted it, put bigger tires, better looking wheels,
lockers,
winch, lockers, awning, refrigerator, everything on it. And that video is over at
TFL Now,
yeah. Or you can watch a walk around. Better yet, just go to TFL-studios.com and you'll see all the videos and all the stories in one place, and you can just watch that video. But yeah, I think that was the hit of the show for me. I also actually got, for the first time, I got up close and personal with the Hummer electric truck. And I thought that was pretty cool. It has a lot of presence, and it seems to be a really cool vehicle with a lot of new and interesting tech, including the crab walk. The miss for me was that Earth Roamer HD, which was, what was it, a 750 Ford or 650 Ford that it was built on?
Yeah, so Earth Roamer takes an F750 Ford, I think it is. I want to say it's a 750, and then Power Stroke, and then they basically build out an entire apartment complex on the back of it, four-wheel drive, but this thing is massive. It's several million dollars, I want to say.
I want to say, too. I don't know how much.
Several million.
We should Google it, but I'll keep talking. Why don't you Google it?
Okay.
But it's such, and then, you know, the shocking part is you go on the inside and they've got such tasteful design aesthetics, right? So granite slab counters, a full-on like farm kitchen sink. They've got those rotary, what are those called? Those thermostats that are now web-enabled.
Nests.
Beautiful appliances. Really beautiful tile in the bathroom. Just the most luxurious of all. Wood. Everything is aluminum. Beautiful. And then they went and rhino lined the entire truck. And to me, I hate rhino-lined vehicles because what that to me says is I didn't have enough money for diamond plate to cover the rust, so I did it the cheap way by rhino coating it. So why you would rhino-line that thing? And the color they rhino-lined it in was this really light blue goofy color, which to me said jelly belly, not expensive. How much is it? Did you look it up?
Okay, starts at $1.9 million.
$2 million. There you go. And how do you change a tire on that? How do you even change a tire?
Okay, so the reason I don't like it is because I just think it's a little too overwrought, and I'm not sure that it really has a lot of capability with the extreme size that this vehicle is. Now, my hit of the show was the fleet of Unimogs that a company called Couch Offroad Engineering.
Yeah, friends. Andre's done some videos with them.
Yeah, they're out of Colorado, actually, out east. And
by the airport.
They're pretty crazy. I'm not into these big overwrought things. And once again, these are very expensive vehicles. But the Unimog is just such an insane piece of engineering with portal axles, 32 speeds forward, 32 speeds in reverse. They've got mechanical injected diesel engines, and then you can put whatever you want on the back.
Yeah, this brings me to Earthroamer. Why don't you just use that as your chassis? Get a Unimog or get a Man, right?
Right, yeah.
Which is designed for that as opposed to this work. I mean, let's face it, an F-650, F-550, these are work trucks. They probably, they had it roped off so you couldn't go into it. You could just poke into it. Then they had it locked up so I didn't see the interior of the cab. But I'm guessing that this truck had, there is no platinum version of an F-750, right, or a King Ranch. They had to probably go and replace everything inside that truck.
Yeah, they say they put a King Ranch interior into it. But anyways, I just think that the Unimog is a much more purpose-built off-road vehicle meant to tackle the most inhospitable parts of the world, where an F-750 is more of a utility contractor going to go fix some power lines. But the Earthroamer is beautiful on the inside. It is larger on the inside than the Unimogs.
It's a moving van. You throw a big box on it and it becomes a moving van, right?
Yeah, but this is four-wheel drive. I mean, it is real four-wheel drive. It's got, I don't know how many gallon tank, but it's got to be hundreds. And then, of course, it's fully kitted out on the inside. But so the other hit of mine was the Honda booth had the new Honda Trail 125.
Yeah, we got to get our Honda. Please send us one. Please, I'm begging. We need to get that thing. That's such a cool little bike. We want to feature it on our bike channel. We want to do a little bit of dirt trail riding with it before the snow falls. I can't wait to get my hands on it. They're, once again, unobtainium. You can't buy them. You can't get them.
So this is an old school Honda Trail that they've reinvented for 2021. Very cool little bike. Hugely popular at the show, too. It's funny. They had Harley Boost with the new Pan America, right? The new off-road machine. They also had Yamaha.
You and Nathan, Tommy.
They also had Yamaha with some really cool off-road bikes. But the Trail was a hit of the motorcycle show. So I think that brings us to the end of the show.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening, and thank you guys for watching. If you're watching this on YouTube, remember, go to tfl-studios.com if you want to see all the videos, podcasts, all in one place. Thank you once again to Tim and the Ronald McDonald House for making our Bronco possible. And we've got a couple of big things coming up. Like I said, we're taking that 4Runner. We're comparing it to the Bronco up Imogene. That's today. So we got a long drive ahead of us, Tommy. And then, of course, we're going to be going to Flagstaff to the expo. So we'll be there as well. So if you're going to be there, look for us. We'll bring you some stickers. We'll hand out stickers. We're going to be there just walking around like the rest of you, checking out the latest overlanding gear.
All right. We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Ciao. Let's hit the road, dude. Do you drive the am I driving the Bronco or are you driving the 4Runner?
We'll fight it out.
We're going to fight for it. All right. See you guys. Ciao.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.